Should we get started? All right. So as I was telling people earlier, this is a compliance session. This is serious business. So I hope you guys are all prepared to stay here for the whole session because we're putting a legal hold in place on this whole room. My name is Quentin. I like to call myself the king of compliance. It's not actually true, but I've got a few groupies up here. So this session is end-to-end e-discovery. We're going to get deep into the details and how a lot of the different things work. We're going to go through all the different capabilities that we have in e-discovery. This is a lot of what I'll be showing is on-premises today in SharePoint 2013. And so pretty much everything I'll be presenting applies to the on-premises products. They're things that you can go and do today with SharePoint 2013 and Exchange 2013. There are a few new things that we've been working on that will be coming to Office 365 pretty soon. I will point those out, and you guys can give me a big applause, and you can be sure at the end of the session you fill out the scores. And just to tell you right now, like I think it's like 5 or 10, but you can put 11 for me. It's okay. So to start off, why does e-discovery matter? 90% of U.S. corporations are currently engaged in litigation where they need to perform e-discovery. The average number of active lawsuits for companies larger than $1 billion is 147. And the average cost per case just for e-discovery is $1 million. I think Dr. Evil is probably involved in here in some way. So what is e-discovery? Well, it's the process of identifying and preserving data, then searching it and processing it to reduce that down to a manageable set, then reviewing that data to go through and determine what content is relevant, and then producing that data to turn it over to the other party that you're involved in a lawsuit with. Now, e-discovery is used for many other purposes as well, such as doing investigations, internally looking at people that may have misbehaved, right? And a lot of times it's about proving that you're right. It's not about turning over some smoking gun or something damaging. It's often about proving we were doing the right things. We have information that shows we were doing this stuff before you guys were, right? And we were doing the right things inside our organization. The volume starts out very large in most cases. There will be a deep dive session tomorrow on how Microsoft deals with e-discovery. Per case, on average, we're dealing with hundreds of gigabytes of data that we start off with in that identify and preserve phase. A lot of the organizations we talk to, per case, they're dealing with hundreds of gigabytes. That is a lot of information to sift through and process. So as you go through these steps and you find that content and process it and search it, you refine it and get to less and less data and increase the relevance of that information. And that's important because it costs a lot of money to have people look at that information. This review phase represents about 70% of the costs for e-discovery in a given case. During the review process, you have attorneys read through all of the documents and determine what is relevant and not relevant. And that's what you need to do in order to figure out if stuff is confidential or attorney-client privileged or relevant to the case, because you don't want to turn over all of the data to the other side. So if you're dealing with 100 gigabytes of data, just some typical costs here. per gigabyte of data to do legal review ranges from about $10,000 per gigabyte to about $40,000 per gigabyte on the high end. So if I send 100 gigabytes of data to that step, you're talking about millions of dollars that you're paying for people to read through your data. That doesn't make a lot of sense. If you can use search and processing capabilities within the system, you can reduce that down to 95% and get to 5, 10, or 15 gigabytes of data. And now you're just paying tens of thousands of dollars. So that shows you how technology that can help you with this process can help you save a lot of money. So there's three big challenges the organization's having today with e-discovery. One is preserving that content. When a legal case occurs, you have an obligation to immediately start protecting that content because it's potentially evidence that needs to be used in court. If you go in and delete all that data, you can actually get enormous fines if they're able to prove that you destroyed potential evidence. The second big challenge is search and data reduction. It's difficult to go out and find this information and hone it down and accurately get to exactly what you're looking for. So a lot of organizations that I've talked to, they just go and gather it all up from every person that is potentially involved, and now they've got a big, huge bucket of data, and they put it on a hard drive, and they hand off to someone else to take care of. And that's expensive. But they have to do that because they don't have the tools in order to search and reduce that information. The third challenge is export. Now, if you're here at the SharePoint conference, you probably have some data in SharePoint, and you may be using Exchange. Well, if you're on Exchange 2010, SharePoint 2010, how do you even go and get the web pages out of a wiki library? Or how do you get newsfeed posts out of SharePoint, right? How do you download the documents or go to a mailbox and get all of that content out? It's not easy. It may take you weeks today, or you just throw up your hands because it's impossible in order to get this data out. So to show a little bit of how Microsoft is helping with this, allow me to do a quick demo. So this is an e-discovery case site in SharePoint 2013. I've already created a query. And so this is where I can go to manage my e-discovery processes. And what you'll notice is I've got an Exchange mailbox and a SharePoint site, and I've put in the keywords Northwind. And so it's going out and doing a search across Exchange and SharePoint. So you'll see I have this mailbox in the SharePoint site. I can see how much information is there, right? And I have these results from Exchange and from SharePoint. So I can go in and preview and see if that's actually the content that I'm looking for. Question over here. The question is, how intensive is this operation? We're actually leveraging the in-place search indexes in SharePoint 2013 and Exchange 2013. We've taken the fast search technology and built that into both Exchange and SharePoint. And that's what really enabled us to do this e-discovery scenario. So the same search engine that users are using when they go to OWA or when they go to SharePoint is what we're leveraging here. So no, this isn't that intensive to just go in and do a quick search. Another question up here.
So when you talk about the scenario where you
So the question is, if you have data that's in the cloud and data that's on premises, how do you do e-discovery across that? I'm actually going to talk more about that near the end of the session, but the short answer is that if you're on premises, you can use SharePoint on premises to search Exchange on premises. And if you have Exchange configured in hybrid, that will also search your mailboxes in the cloud. Now, if you're SharePoint hybrid, you're going to need two SharePoint e-discovery centers. And I'll talk more in depth about that later in the session. So what I just showed right now was a quick investigation. I did not have to go and collect data from all those different mailboxes and the SharePoint site, put it all in a different search tool. Today, that may take you weeks in order to go do that. You put it into some other search tool, and then a month later, you can start running some searches. Since this is in place, it allows you to quickly and easily go in at any time and run a search so you can get information about how much data is going to be in this case. Do we have the right sets of search terms, right? And you can make decisions. If you see that there's 500 gigabytes of data here, you might go back and negotiate with the other side and say, this is way too broad of a search. We need to come up with some ways that we can filter this down and search to get it to the relevant set of information. The other side, they're not going to want to have to look through 500 gigabytes of data in order to find the 10 documents of interesting evidence either, because that's going to cost them a lot of money. So they're often willing to go through and help you figure out, okay, what's actually interesting here? How can we hone this down? So this helps with early case assessment. You can get answers much more quickly and easily than you can today. Second was the fast real-time search, right? So we're using fast technology under the covers so we can go out and search on live, up-to-date data. And third is that you can get your answers in minutes, even seconds, rather than weeks. So this is what I want you to take away from the session today. We have three major capabilities. In-place hold, so you can preserve the data, so you make sure you have it as evidence later down the road. Two, search queries, so you can reduce and get to that relevant set of information, helping reduce your costs. And three, export, easily download and get that data out of the system. And we have three big advantages over the competition. Our in-place approach means that you can just let the content continue to live in Exchange and SharePoint. That way you're always searching up-to-date information, but because you can use in-place hold, you can preserve the content so people can continue to delete and make changes to content, but you still have it there and can search on it for e-discovery. And then we've also simplified. If you've used other e-discovery search tools before, there's lots of different steps you have to go through. There's a million different knobs, right? We've given you a very basic interface that allows you to do complex searches and get a preview and make sure you're doing the right things, but there's not 10 million different knobs. We didn't give you the 747 cockpit, but we've given you a lot of the power that you need in order to get your job done. This simplifies e-discovery, helps you save time, and helps save your organization money, and helps you reduce risk. All this adds up to making e-discovery as easy as 1, 2, 3. One, using in-place hold to protect content in place in real time. Two, using search queries to find up-to-date and relevant content. And then three, exporting all that data out so you have it in an offline format that you can pass off for legal review, other investigations, and production. And we do this across SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and file shares, so that whether you're on-premises or Office 365, we have you covered. So everything that I've discussed and shown so far is available in SharePoint 2013 and Exchange 2013. I'm going to take a few minutes to show some of the new capabilities that we have coming that we've been working on Office 365. But first, was there a question up here?
Is Yammer also included?
So the question was, is Yammer also included? No, we don't have a story for Yammer yet. Raise of hands, who thinks doing e-discovery on Yammer content is important? All right. So yeah, I mean, that every time I ask that question, it looks like that. So we know it's important. We're thinking about it. The Yammer team does have some e-discovery capabilities. You can do an export of their data. It's very simple. You can't do search as an in-place hold. But those are things that we're definitely talking to the Yammer team about and looking for what's the right approach for our customers. Question over here.
You mentioned file shares. You're referring to OneDrive or other shares?
So both. When I talk about file shares, with on-premises SharePoint 2013, you can index file shares with SharePoint search, and that can get surfaced in the eDiscovery Center. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. We also support searching over OneDrive sites, and so you can add OneDrive sites here as well, and I'll show that in just a little, in a minute in the demo. Another question over here. There's a question, if you export from Yammer, can you search that export? Yes, you can. You could do an export from Yammer. You could load that into SharePoint, or you could load it into a file share and then search across it. So the Compliance Center, you saw in the keynote demo yesterday, and you've seen this in the compliance overview session we had. The Compliance Center is a place where we're bringing the compliance capabilities together. And we'll start with this in Office 365, and it'll eventually come to on-premises in the next release. The Compliance Center lets you do things such as manage data loss prevention policies, manage archive, deletion policies, hold policies. And we have an e-discovery center is tied into this compliance center. So today, there's a few different steps you need to go through in order to set up an e-discovery center, and then people need to know where to go to access it. This makes it nicer and easier in order to be able to just go in, and I can see I've already created in my eDiscovery Center. It gives me a nice list where I can sort by the date created. And I can click on these to open them up. So we've come back to this eDiscovery case site, and I have an existing search query I've already created. And this is going to search on sensitive information. Now, one of the new things that we've been working on that will be coming to Office 365 soon is we have the ability to search everything. So today, in the eDiscovery Center, you can add 100 SharePoint sites, and you can add up to 1,500 Exchange mailboxes. With Search Everything, it will run a search against all of your mailboxes and all of your SharePoint sites, and then we'll give you a list back that shows what were the sites and the mailboxes that had the most hits? And there's a number of reasons that you'd want to use this. One is for this sensitive information, I'm doing an investigation. You can see I have a credit card number and a U.S. Social Security number property in here. So that's the data that I'm going to search for across SharePoint. So what's happened here is it's brought back, here is a team site, and I can see that I have 8 hits there. And this is Garth Fort's OneDrive for Business site. So I can see that there's someone who is, they're storing some of the sensitive information within their own personal site. Question up here. So there's a question about pattern matching. So you're talking about the properties that I'm searching on up front. So what we're working on right now is that we have 51 out-of-the-box sensitive information classifications. So we've integrated those into the search indexing pipeline so that as we go and index documents, we look at and identify when they have credit card numbers, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, and all these different types of information, and then we'll mark it up with a metadata property. So there's no customization, there's no support for adding in your own different types that you might want to look for just yet, but that's definitely something that we'll be taking a look at in the future. It's something that we support with data loss prevention in exchange today. Was there a question up front or? Okay, perfect. Question in the middle here. So what we're showing here is the URL, right? So those will typically have, like the path will note that it's a my site right here. In this case, it's got a slash personal. So for your own organization, you would have customized what that path is, so you'd be able to tell that it's one of those sites. Okay? One of the things that I also have here is this query statistics control. And so what it's done is it's broken down that search query on the and, so I can see there's 2 hits for credit cards, and there's 10 hits for social security numbers. So this is one of the ways that we help you be able to look at your query to see and understand what's going on so that you can do analysis here. So I'm going to go back to the Compliance Center. And there is a new type of hold that we've been working on as well. So if I go to the archive section, right, I have these hold policies. And I'll show hold in the eDiscover Center in just a bit, but this is a new thing that we've been working on in Office 365 as well. So we have the concept of an indefinite in-place hold that lets you keep content on hold forever until you go and release it. Now, there's also cases where you want to have a combination of deletion and hold policies. For example, tax records I need to keep for 7 years, and I absolutely need to make sure I protect those. I don't want someone going in and accidentally deleting that content. But after those 7 years are up, I want that content to be deleted. So this is one of the ways that you can accomplish this, but you can also use these holds to do the indefinite e-discovery holds as well. So you have one place that you can go to manage both broad organizational policies as well as specific case policies. So I can put in keywords here. I can put in a specific time frame if I want to. In this case, I'm going to select that I want both mailboxes and sites. And we've got a new picker that's a little bit better for selecting mailboxes in exchange. And I can also pick SharePoint sites that I have in my environment. I'm just going to do a quick copy of my site here. And so this goes out to SharePoint and validates that that's an actual site. Question over here in the front? That is a good question. So the question was, we searched for sensitive information classifications in the SharePoint eDiscover Center. Could I do that here? And the answer is yes, you actually could put one of those in. It is important to note that searching for those sensitive classifications is only something we're working on in SharePoint right now, so it would only find content in SharePoint. It wouldn't find content in Exchange. So if I wanted to put a hold policy on credit card numbers, I would be able to do that in SharePoint. So I get a few different options here. I could put in a date range to keep this content for, or I can just hold it indefinitely. So in this case, I'll put in 1 year. Hit next, and then this gives me a summary of what's going on with this hold, and then I can go turned on and actually start enforcing that. Yes. So the question was, what does the hold mean? And I actually have some slides for that. So with in-place hold, content stays in Exchange, and SharePoint content stays in SharePoint. And the way it works is that in a lot of cases, what you're putting on hold, it's already been created, and it's a few years old. So people aren't actually actively working on it and deleting that content. So because we keep the content in Exchange and SharePoint, we can do something very smart. Today, your e-discovery process probably looks like I go out and I get a copy of hundreds of gigabytes of stuff and I put it in some other place. And if you're a big company, wow, we've got like 100 terabytes of data that we're keeping around for legal hold, and that costs us a lot of money and it's risky. With in-place hold, because a lot of that data doesn't actually change, we can just say, okay, if this item gets deleted, or if it gets modified after a hold has been put in place, take a copy of it, what it looks like at that point in time. So that way we always guarantee we have what the content looked like at the time the hold was put in place. And the very important thing about this is that it's seamless to your users. They can edit their documents, they can add new posts or make changes to their news feeds. They can edit web pages in SharePoint. And if deletion policies come through and delete documents or delete emails in someone's mailbox, we just store that behind the scenes within the same mailbox, within the same site, with high fidelity. So this uses less storage space because we don't need a copy of everything. We only need a copy when stuff gets deleted or changed. Now, another important part of this is that we can do location and query-based. Right, so as I showed that hold there, I was able to put in the keywords Northwind, and so that's only going to keep on hold items that have the keywords Northwind in it. And I can pick the specific site collections or subsites and specific mailboxes, so I don't need to hold tons of data. I can get more scope in the granularity. So question up here. Yes.
What happens if you place an in-place hold on something in OneDrive? This is, and the user stops, quits the company, and the system might
get deleted? That is a great question. So the question was, what happens if a user leaves the organization and we've got their OneDrive site and it's got all this content in it? And the bigger problem there is actually with mailboxes of people that leave the organization. And so we have a solution called inactive mailboxes that allows you to delete the user account so you no longer have to pay for it, but you would put the mailbox on hold before you do that, right? Or if the mailbox is already on hold, you go delete the user. That mailbox will continue to live as an inactive mailbox, so you still have that user's information. There's also the case of I have a whole bunch of data from people that already left my organization a long time ago, right? And you can do a similar thing. You can create mailboxes, put them on hold, and load in that data, right? And you can do similar things for the SharePoint sites. You have a couple of options. You could export out that entire person's SharePoint site, and you could load it in somewhere else. I don't know the details. If we have the site on hold, I'm not totally sure on the details on whether we automatically end up deleting that site. So that's something that I have to check in on. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So, question over here. Yes.
Or
So the question was, can I put in OneDrive for business sites? And what if I want to put a policy in place or a hold in place for all of my OneDrive for business sites, or maybe specific groups of people? So for the Exchange side, you can put in distribution groups there that you could keep on hold, so you could keep a group of people on hold. For the SharePoint sites, for hold, it is one at a time. We are looking at how we could do either broadly across the entire organization in the future, or put in specific templates. If you attend Astrid's retention session tomorrow, she'll talk about how we can assign retention policies to templates, right? And so that's a bit of a start towards that. We don't quite have hold for it yet today, but it's something that we'll be looking at in the future. Yes, question over here. So the question was, can you do a query on specific people or other types of information? We don't keep a record that's searchable of every single item that a person has touched. You can do a search on a person, and you can actually see right here that we have a author and sender field actually right here. You can put in people here, so if people are the author of a document, that metadata gets persisted there, or if they were the person who sent an email, then we'll search for that. There's also a lot of different, there's more than 1,000 managed properties in SharePoint that you can search on that are just like those sensitive classification types, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later as well. If you put in the property name and a colon, and then you can just put in a value for it, then there's all sorts of different properties you could try and search on to help scope your search query down as well. Up here in the front.
So as part of the discovery, if you have auditing already or not in SharePoint, are those audits directly both approachable and essentially surfaced out here as part of the discovery process?
The question was, are auditing records searchable through eDiscovery? And the answer to that is no. All right, right here.
I was under the impression that hold could only place on particular license types. For example, the E3 user versus E1, the 365. Is that still true?
So the question was, how does licensing for hold work? And so creating the eDiscovery Center requires an E3 or E4 license or SharePoint Plan 2. So you need to have on-premises, an enterprise license. And then in order to put Exchange mailboxes on hold, those users need to have a premium license. Okay, in the middle here.
When you apply the policy, do you apply the policy to the content types? And then how does it work with the retention schedules which are associated with that?
So the question was about content types and retention policy. So you can search on content types. In here, you could put that in as a property that you apply the hold on. I would attend Astrid's session on retention tomorrow morning, and she'll go more in depth detail, or that'd be a great question to talk to her about, because we don't really do anything specific with content types for eDiscovery, and that's a big part of the investment, is that a lot of your data does not have a structured content type, right? People just upload documents and then it's the document content type. So it's something that you can search on, but it's not something that we surface and enforce through eDiscovery. Yes, one more question.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what happens when we go over quota? So with the much larger site collections, that should be a much more manageable problem, right? And you want to be scoped with what you have on hold anyways. If the site hits quota, then people will be blocked from being able to do anything else with it. So what you could do to get out of that is to do an export of data from the site and then release the hold there. You could go in and delete and clean up the content. So a key part of this hold that we've talked about is no impact to users, so they can still go in, create an edit, make changes to their documents, and they don't even need to know that hold is in place. Right? We also cover link content. So when users are having instant messages with other people, or there's link meetings that has content uploaded to it, there's actually a server-side archiving setting. So it's not something that the users actually control. So all of that communication will get archived into the user's mailbox. And so when you add someone's mailbox for a search query or put it on hold, all of that link data is searchable and on hold as well. Yes? Yes, that applies to link online as well. Question in the middle. It excludes recordings, because we don't convert the entire recording to text, and we don't have a way to index and search the audio. But if people upload PowerPoint presentations or other content to the meeting, that does get captured, and a record of the meeting gets captured. Or if there's instant messages during the meeting, that will get captured as well. Right? So we sync the hold state between these. Right? So the user's data is getting archived all the time, and then when they get put on hold, right, that data is going to be in their mailbox, and we'll make sure we keep it and preserve it. Question over here.
Can the end user search that repository is separate from the conversation history folder?
That is a great question. So the instant messages they're having goes into the conversation history folder, but this is a bit different than that. And if stuff has been deleted, right, the stuff goes into the purges folder, so you can where they're not going to be able to see this, the content. And that's an important part of the hold as well, is that users aren't going to go and see that they've got this folder in their mailbox that has all of this eDiscovery data in it. It's actually hidden, but it's searchable when you're an eDiscovery user. So SharePoint in place hold, it covers SharePoint lists, it covers feeds, and as well as documents, web pages, web part pages, wiki pages, blog posts. Admins can't go in and delete the hold data or the site, so we do a great job of protecting and making sure that data is preserved. And then version history is also preserved if versioning is turned on. So if you have a document library that has versioning on, when someone deletes that document, we retain the entire version history. So that data is all preserved as well. Now this goes through the life cycle of an Exchange mailbox. So messages are coming in all the time. Content gets moved to the deleted items folder. Users can actually go in and, of course, empty their deleted items folder. Right? So when that gets purged, we actually have this discovery hold folder that's hidden in the mailbox. Right? And that's where the content goes and is stored for eDiscovery. So when users run a search or they look at their mailbox, they don't see these other folders. Right? They may think it's completely gone. But if you have that on in-place hold, their content is going to go there, and you'll still be able to search it as an eDiscovery user. Right? If you have that query-based hold on, where you've put in some keywords, we clean that data up out of the discovery hold folder. And we do the exact same thing in SharePoint. So periodically, we'll come through, and we will look at what are all the holds that are in place on this mailbox or SharePoint site? Are there queries that apply, right? And if they're all search queries, then we take a look at the content in there. And if it doesn't match any of those search queries, we can clean it up and get rid of it. It doesn't need to be on hold any longer. Now, holds can overlap, right? And the biggest one is going to win, right? So if I'm holding an entire user's mailbox, and then I have another hold that just says, look for these specific keywords, we're going to hold that entire mailbox, right? We're going to overprotect that data because we know it's super important that this data gets kept, so we do the right thing. Yes? So the question was, if the user changes a document and it's on hold, what happens, right? So Say you've put hold in place on a site. The first time someone comes in and edits a document, we're going to capture a copy of it right then before their change goes through. So that way we have a copy of what it looks like before any changes were made to that document. The user's change will finish and they'll see the updated document, but there's a special preservation hold library in that SharePoint site that we'll send that old version, that old copy to. Now, if versioning is turned on, they can go through and they'll be, the version system will just, it'll automatically make versions or the user can create versions. If they delete that document, all of that version history will be kept. So we don't capture every single little change that happens to a document, right? But we do keep what all the data looks like at that time that you started that hold, as well as what the document currently looks like today, and then all of that version history as well, which is recorded information in the system. So let's take a look a bit more in depth at the eDiscovery Center. This is my eDiscovery case site that we showed earlier. And we have this concept of eDiscovery sets, right? And that's a lot like the hold I showed earlier. eDiscovery sets are what you can use in SharePoint 2013 on-premises today. And it allows you to create a group of data. So I can add in Exchange mailboxes and SharePoint sites. And I can also add in file shares here if I was on-prem as well. So here I can put in a search query, right, just like I could before. I can run a search to see how much content is there. Right, so it's running a search right now to tell me all of the data that's in these two Exchange mailboxes and this site. So I can see there's about 104 megabytes of data here. Now I can put in additional search terms, and you can see just putting in one word actually will reduce this data down quite significantly, right? I've cut that down by 80, 90%. I can also do a preview here as well. So if I wanted to go in and spot check and see that my search query is doing the things that I want it to do. Question over here. So the question was, can I do a search on all of my sites, but then put in specific locations that I know may have interesting content? I don't want to search these four or five specific ones. The answer is no, you can't do that today. Question in the middle here. I didn't quite catch the last couple parts there.
So in some of the litigations and some of the subpoenas, they may say that you have an obligation to keep and preserve data until the time you need to do it.
Yeah.
So if I do that today, if I my file production is created for another month, I have one month gap. Is there a way to cover that 1 month gap when I create the stuff?
Yeah, so the question was that oftentimes there's an obligation to capture data all the way up until you do your final production. And that's the great thing about the in-place approach over different eDiscovery tools today, right? If you put in that in-place hold, we're covering that data that's there, right? It's only when you put in a specific date range that you would then scope down the amount of data that you have covered. So another part of that question was, can I put in just some dates and no keywords? And yes, you can do that. Any of these fields I could leave blank. And I could put in just a start date or just an end date or just some dates. And people, if I don't put any date range in, that preservation is going to keep going all the way up until you release it. So that way it's very easy for you to come in and do a follow-up collection. So question here. Yes, so file shares, we don't support putting them on hold. We allow you to search it, and you could do an export of it. So if you wanted to, you could export that file share data, and you could take that and load it into a SharePoint site, or you could put it into another secure file share. Question over here. Yeah, so the question was, if I put in a query three months ago, and then I come back and now my production is today, I need to get those new items, how does that work, right? So the search is real and up to date, right? So every time I go in and run a search, it's going to look at the content that exists there. So the way you would handle that would be, 3 months ago I ran a search, and maybe you did an export, you got all of that data. What you would need to do is 3 months later, you come back, you would run that search query again. Now, that will get all of the same items again, so you would need to do a comparison. We don't have a differential export that allows you to just get the new things or the changed content. Yeah.
That would be a date range, then. You could run the same.
You could use a date range. Yeah. If you, in some cases, you may adjust your query and search on different stuff. That's the main case that we don't cover. Here in front. Yes, so the question was, we need to do e-discovery on lots of other systems as well, and I've already got search tools for that, such as Encase. How can I do that? And when you do an export, we have the EDRM XML manifest that has metadata about the item, so you can actually take that information and you could import it into another system, right? We give you loose native files of the Word documents, and I'll explain more in depth all of that later. So you can use this to feed this in other search tools. That's important. All the way in the back.
Along the lines of the file share question, if we were indexing, say, SharePoint 2010 sites, do we still find the content and export it?
So the question was, if our search is indexing SharePoint 2010 sites, can we handle that? And the answer to that is yes. You can't put it on in-place hold, but if you have your search upgraded to SharePoint 2013 search, and that's crawling 2010 farms, you can run a search and you can export from those 2010 and even those 2007 farms as well. Yes, in the back. So SharePoint, you'll use keyword query language in order to search those previous versions. The same search syntax you use works for 2013, 2010, and 2007, because it's all upgraded on the search. Now, for Exchange, you have to be on Exchange 2013. All right, so I'm going to save this eDiscovery set. I've turned on in-place hold, and this is going to go out to that SharePoint site and turn on the hold. So now, this is that SharePoint site that I've put on hold, and I'm actually going to go in, edit this web page, and it says here we've been ranked first in our division three quarters, and we actually are now past four quarters, so our team's doing good. You know, I'm just a regular guy out here working, doing my job, updating my web pages. I can go in and save this web page, and what we'll do behind the scenes is capture an archived web page version of that file. So since I'm logged in as the eDiscovery user, I actually see this preservation hold library. And you'll see it says modified a minute ago. And this is my web page. So you'll see It shows what it looked like before, the past three quarters, right? And my change was past four, right? And I've got these documents here. So it has the script, the CSS, the images. So I have all of this information in this archive web page that I can now take offline. If the web page changes, right, if someone came in and changed this graphic, then I would still have what it looked like back in the past because we archive all that. Question over here. Yeah, so the question is, if I have stuff on hold for a long time and then I'm going to upgrade to the new version of SharePoint, what happens? Well, we don't have the new version of SharePoint yet, but we are upgrading the cloud every single day, right? And we'll make sure the right things happen, that stuff stays on hold and that you're able to manage those holds and release them when you need to. And that if you have a hold policy for 7 years, right, that stays enforced and working, right? That's super critical. Yeah, so for both on-premises and SharePoint Online, that like making sure that upgrade is seamless and works and that your compliance policies don't change is important, and we'll make sure that happens. Question right here. That's a good question. Content editor web part. I don't know for sure on that one. If someone kicks the page into edit mode and they make changes in that content edit web part and then that page gets saved, that will get triggered as a save to the web page. And then we will capture that as an MHT. And the content editor web part changes will change in there. I don't remember if you can go somewhere else and edit the content editor web part without editing the web page. In that case, we might not capture that, but I'm not totally sure. The answer is no, okay. Question here in the middle. Okay, so the question is, we want a low-cost storage. So number one, what we've seen is that this actually doesn't increase storage very much. As we've been analyzing different customers, as well as our own internal usage, because we have a lot of our sites inside Microsoft on hold, active team sites, is that this doesn't create a ton of extra storage. And then, of course, inside Microsoft, I'll say SharePoint Online, we just announced enormous tenants and 1 terabyte site collections. Other than that, there's no way of taking that preservation hold library data and putting it somewhere else unless you did something like remote blob storage. Right? That would be the one option. All right. So we've shown a little bit of the search queries. It allows you to look at real time. You don't have to wait for indexing of the content. It's always live and up to date. You can use keyword syntax as well as different search properties to reduce and find what you're looking for to help save money. And then help make decisions, right? The query and the source statistics that help you analyze. So I'll switch back and show a little bit of that. So here's my query page once again. I can do something a little more sophisticated. This is a proximity operator, and I'll also add in a wildcard. So I'll show that real quick. So this is searching the keyword Northwind within 20 keywords of the keyword market star, right? So that's going to search all the different variations of that word. So I can hit the search button, right? That's going to reissue the search. And so this is one of the ways that we've improved our search query capabilities in our keyword query language to meet the needs of eDiscovery. Now, I can also click on these items. I can actually preview in a read-only view that exchange content. So this is using OA to load in this specific email. I can't reply to it or make changes to it, but I can go in and analyze and see if this is the kind of content that I'm looking for. We can also scope down the content as well. So you can see that I have MHT files and ASPX files here. I want to just look for web pages and Excel files, I can do that, hit apply, it updates the search and reduces that set of data. So here's just some examples of the different kinds of things that you can do with that keyword syntax, right? So I can search for specific phrases by using quotations. So if I want to search for executive briefing, that exact phrase, that'll return me back documents for that. I can use Boolean operators such as and, or, not. So if I wanted to look for executive briefing and the word summary, I can also search for specific properties. So if I put in file name colon budget, right, that would find me all documents that have budget in the file name. And then I showed the keyword, the proximity search operator near, allowing me to search terms. Because if two words occur close to each other, that means that content's going to be more relevant, more responsive. Now, one of the other cool things that we can do is we can use the queries list to work with multiple search queries at the same time. So you can see I have this Excel spreadsheet here where I have a name column and a query column. And I've created some example queries here. So I'm going to go back to the eDiscovery Center here. I'm going to kick this list into edit mode. And I can actually paste these queries in right here. Right, so this goes and creates those queries. If I wanted to make quick changes to that syntax, then I could do it. And up in the items list, I can hit update statistics. So that's now going to go out and run those different search queries. So you can see I've created some different variations of different proximity operators. So I'm going to search within 10, within 5, within 20. And then that'll get me back the items and size for those queries. There we go. Right, so I can see 5 and 10, it doesn't make really any of a difference. So this is how I could test out a whole bunch of different variations, different types of keywords all at once, and quickly make changes. Question up here. The question is there a limit on how many characters are available? So we allow up to 500 keywords to be put into the keywords field, and then you can also put in any different number of specific properties, such as looking for Excel files or author or date range. Now, another thing I can do is export. So I can actually select these multiple queries, hit that export button, and there's a few different things that we can do on this data. One, I could remove duplicate exchange content. So if a message was in two different people's mailboxes, right, we can get rid of that. That helps with about a 50% reduction in data. I can include versions for SharePoint documents. So I don't need versions of all the documents in every single case, but in certain cases, I might want to get that information. And we also allow you to include items that had indexing issues. So items that were encrypted or password protected zip files or image files. You may be interested in getting that information so that you could do additional processing on it because it may be potentially relevant for your case. So if you select that option, we will download all of those items that we were not able to completely fully index, and then you have it in a separate folder in the Exchange mailbox and in the SharePoint export, so that you can go and process that file. Question right here. The question is, how does that function when you have rights management enabled on the SharePoint document library? And so we're able to search content that is rights managed, protected with the RMS protection in SharePoint. We will download that content, and we're able to have that file, not encrypted. With the Exchange content, you can have Exchange content, of course, RMS encrypted as well. We're able to search that content too, and we will export that, but that will still be encrypted. And then, of course, there's other encryption types as well, like S/MIME, and you can do some protection on Word files. That stuff we're not able to crack open, right? And so if you check this option to include the items that are encrypted or have an unrecognized format, then you would have a copy of all of that stuff, and you could use your own tools to go in and process and look at that data. Question in the back. The question was, do you have the ability within the export or maybe some step before it to do redaction or tag or mark things up? No, so our strategy is that we have a clear split between the processes there. So we've focused on having the export be in a compatible format where you can import and use that in other systems. So we don't do any redaction or legal review capabilities natively as part of the system. Now, you can use the Exchange-only e-discovery tools to copy data into another mailbox, and you can do some basic categorization with the OWA categories, but that doesn't support redaction either, and it doesn't support SharePoint content as well. All right, so I can click the OK button, and we have the e-discovery download tool, which allows me to download this content directly to my desktop. So it's going to download all the data straight from Exchange and SharePoint. So it downloads the Exchange files as PSTs. Right? If you've done deduplication, then you'll have one PST that has that deduplicated content. From SharePoint, you'll get the native files, so Word, Excel, PowerPoint. And we will get the SharePoint lists and news feeds as CSV files. And the web pages, wiki pages, blog pages, we will get those all as archived web pages, .mht files. Now, we also include a report where we have EDRM XML. So we support the EDRM XML standard. That has metadata about each of the different files in there, right? So it's easy to download and do the export from SharePoint, Exchange, and file shares. We support the EDRM XML. I'm actually on the standard setting committee for that. And it allows you to take the data offline, right? It's in a format where you can load that into other e-discovery tools, right? And this is an example of what that EDRM XML manifest file looks like. It's just the manifest.xml file that's in the export. It has information about each of the items that have been downloaded. So each document, it'll say where it was originally located. It'll have hashes of it, so it can do a comparison when you load it into other tools to make sure the content hasn't changed since the export. And my export is now complete. So we can see here I have those two PST files for Katie and Sarah, as well as here's my sales and marketing site. So we have a folder hierarchy that shows what the SharePoint site looked like. And I can either open up those web pages. You can see here are those web pages that I made changes to that were in the preservation hold library. We also include a summary of the export, and then this is that manifest XML file for EDRM. So what about all of my other data? You're probably concerned not just about Exchange and SharePoint. Probably you go and collect information from people's laptops, their desktops, PCs. There may be other systems where you have information. So there's two different approaches you can take here. One is you can collect and gather up all of that information. And so the PSTs that you may collect from users' desktops and laptops, you can import and load that back into Exchange. And the loose files that you can collect, you would put those either into a file share or into SharePoint. So on the right side here, or on the left side here, this is showing an on-prem installation, right, connected to Exchange Online. So that's the hybrid story, is that you have your eDiscovery Center in SharePoint on-premises, and you can use that to connect to Exchange on-prem, which will talk to Exchange in the cloud if it's on hybrid. So all that legacy data you may have stored around, you can load that either back into a file share or into SharePoint and Exchange so that you're able to search and access it. And when you go and do a collection, you can use that approach as well. If you're in the cloud, then you can load those PSTs into Exchange Online and those files into SharePoint Online. Right? In the past, that was a little bit more of a challenge because we had a 100 gigabyte site collection limits and a fairly small overall tenant size. But as you guys probably saw in the keynote, we announced 1 terabyte size site collections and unlimited size tenants. So it's now a viable option for you to store all that data that you're collecting in SharePoint Online. So you can use your SharePoint Online eDiscovery Center to search and work with that data. Now, another strategy would be that you have other eDiscovery tools in your organization, right? And what you could do is use the same process you do today, go and collect files from your desktops, right? You load it into that other eDiscovery tool, and then you use exports from Exchange and SharePoint to make your life much easier to get that data out of SharePoint Exchange, whether you're on-premises or in Office 365. You can do initial searching to help reduce down the amount of data you're dealing with. That's what we've seen a lot of customers do, is that they still have sophisticated eDiscovery tools. They'll do some initial basic searching, which can allow them to cut it down 50, 60%, and then they have much less data that they're dealing with to search on in their other eDiscovery tools. So you can't see the details on this, but it is in the slide deck, and we also have this available online. This is a diagram showing the architecture of eDiscovery. So I've talked about the simplification of eDiscovery. I know this doesn't look simple. It depends on what side of it you're on, right? We really focused on making sure the user experience worked great. Now, setting it up on premises, there are some setup steps because you need to get Exchange and SharePoint connected together. So there's an opportunity there if you're an IT pro or in consulting or a partner to help organizations get set up and started, because they're often dealing with terabytes of legacy data, right? But this just gives you an idea of all of the complicated work that we did under the covers to make this stuff all work together. So you could say, thank you, Quentin, because it was not easy. If you want to understand the deep details, this diagram is available online. It shows how SharePoint and the search farm and Exchange all communicate and work together and how you deal with file shares. So for the people that are doing the searches, exporting the data, dealing with this information, we focused on making it as easy as 1, 2, 3. One, using in-place hold to preserve and protect content in place in real time. Two, using search queries to find up-to-date data quickly so you can reduce the amount of information that you're dealing with. Three, export, getting that content out of Exchange and SharePoint so you have it into a format that you can load into other eDiscovery tools or hand off for additional processing. Right, and we do this across SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and file shares, both on-premises and in Office 365. So here's those key takeaways for you to leave with this session. One, we've got those three capabilities: in-place hold, query, and export. Then our big advantages. Our in-place strategy is really huge. It allows us to make it a lot easier. It allows us to simplify the process. It cuts down the amount of time that it takes in order to go in and search and understand and deal with this data and manage this problem, because you're able to search in real time, and we've simplified the process. So be sure to give me awesome scores on the reviews. Please review the session. Thank you very much for your time. I'll be around for questions.